Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Brastaya Bhutale Shimari Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namani Namaste Sarasvata Deva Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shanyavadi Vastafide Shatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Suti Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 9. Prahlad pacifies the Lord with prayers. Text 15. Naham. Naham bibemya jitateti vayanakasya.
Naham bibemya jitateti vayanakasya.
Njivaka neka brukuti rabasogra dangstra.
Njivaka neka brukuti rabasogra dangstra.
Antrasra jakshata jakeshara sankukarnan.
Antrasra jakshata jakeshara sankukarnan.
Nishada bhita digivada ribinakagrat.
Nishada bhita digivada ribinakagrat.
Naham bibhemi ajita tedi.
Translation. My Lord, who are never conquered by anyone, I am certainly not afraid of your ferocious mouth and tongue, your eyes bright like the sun, or your frowning eyebrows. I do not fear your sharp piercing teeth, your garland of intestines, your mane soaked with blood, or your high wedge-like ears, nor do I fear your tumultuous roaring, which makes elephants flee to distant places, or your nails, which are meant to kill your enemies. Purport. Lord Narasimhadev's fierce appearance was certainly most dangerous for the non-devotees, but for Prahlad Maharaj, such a fearful appearance was not at all disturbing. The lion is very fearsome for other animals, but its cubs are not at all afraid of the lion. The water of the sea is certainly dreadful for all living entities on the land, but within the sea even the small fish is unafraid. Why? Because a small fish has taken shelter of the big ocean. It is said that although great elephants are taken away by the flooding waters of the river, the small fish swim opposite the current. Therefore, although the Lord sometimes assumes a fierce appearance to kill the Duskritis, the devotees worship him. Keshava Drita Narahari Rupa Jaya Jagadisha Hare. The devotee always takes pleasure in worshipping the Lord and glorifying the Lord in any form, either pleasing or fierce. Translation. My Lord, who are never conquered by anyone, I am certainly not afraid of your ferocious mouth and tongue, your eyes bright like the sun, or your frowning eyebrows. I do not fear your sharp, piercing teeth, your garland of intestines, your mane soaked with blood, or your high wedge-like ears. Nor do I fear your tumultuous roaring, which makes elephants flee to distant places, or your nails, which are meant to kill your enemies. So here Prahlad is describing Narasimhadev in all his ghastly and ferocious nature. On the one hand, it is not a very beautiful description from the normal point of view. One time we had a Narasimhadev play in Madras. And the devotees started stopping during the Kasipu, and Narasimhadev came out of the column, and then all the kids started crying. So for some people it'll be very ferocious, the big teeth and big sounds and blood spattering everywhere. So one could be very frightened by that, and of course for the demons it is frightening. We find that the demons of Hiranyakasipu and the big demons were fighting with Narasimhadev, and Narasimhadev was tearing them all apart, and so they're all defeated. And even the devatas were somewhat astounded by this ferocious form of the Lord. But we see that Prahlad is attracted to this form of the Lord. It is very wonderful, though it is ferocious. So as I mentioned yesterday, actually the Supreme Lord, though He is all-loving, within that love, there's various manifestations of various tastes and various emotions, just as we have emotions in this material world. So in this material world we have positive and negative emotions. Love is the positive emotion, which is exhibited in different relationships like friends and parental relationship and conjugal relationship. That's the positive aspect. Neutral one is shanta. And then we have some tastes in relationships were a little bit negative, such as fear. We fear someone. So that's a negative type of relationship. Anger, again negative in the material world. Ghastliness and shock, called vibhatsarasa. It's also a negative feeling. Shoka, or lamentation, or karuna. This is also negative. So in this way we have all sorts of negative emotions also in the material world as well as positive. So in the spiritual world also these same things are there. Therefore we have the primary rasas and the secondary rasas. So the primary rasas are the basic loving relationships. And in the secondary rasas we have these feelings which seem to disturb a little bit the main rasa. But actually they had taste to the rasa. So in the spiritual world we will have fear and anger and envy and jealousy and all these things will also be there in the spiritual world, just like in the material world. But there's a profound difference also, just as there's a difference between the love that exists in the material world and the love that exists in the spiritual world. This is probably the main point that the Goswamis and others are trying to get across about the love of the Supreme Lord, and particularly the gopis' love of Krishna, how it is completely different from the love of the material world, though it looked very similar. And there are great similarities also. And therefore, even in the spiritual world, it is the relationships of the gopis to Krishna is called kama rupa. So generally, kama is associated with the material world. But the gopis' love with Krishna looks like the relationships in the material world. When a woman is attracted to the man, it's called kama rupa even. But then the distinction is made that actually it is not the same as the kama in the material world. Actually, it is prema. And Lord Chaitanya has said, in the material world we have kama, and we have to transform that kama into prema. So there's some difference there. It's not exactly the same thing. It's different. And actually, it's a profound difference. This, of course, is similarity also. Because there's a relationship, and it's a relationship based upon some idea of love. But at the same time, there's a big difference there. So with the primary rasa, there's the big difference. And with the secondary rasa, also, there's a big difference. Of course, in the spiritual world, all the rasas are there, are pleasing, and they are a cause of ananda or bliss. In the material world, the positive rasas, of course, are supposed to be for pleasure, and the negative ones are those ones you want to avoid. We don't like fear, we don't like anger, we don't like ghastliness, all these different things, fright. We don't want these things, and we want the positive ones. So the secondary rasas are rather negative, and we try to avoid those in the material world. Has been undesirable. In the spiritual world, on the other hand, everything is part of bliss. And therefore, this picture of Nrsimhadeva, who was so ferocious, is actually pleasing. This is a picture of the Supreme Lord, who is manifesting himself in the form of a lion, and he is frowning, and his eyes are burning with anger, and his mouth is open, and his tongue is flickering, and his eyes are his ears are pointed up. In great anger. And he's got a garland of intestines of Hrinakasipu around his neck. So it's a very, and he's roaring at the same time. His nails are very sharp. So a very ferocious picture, but this is the picture of the Supreme Lord. And it is all pleasing. It is absolute. So even though from the material point of view it is frightening, from the point of view of the devotee, it is pleasing. And so that is because the rasas in the spiritual world give rise to pleasure, and those in the material world may not, especially the secondary rasas. So the difference is because the Lord is the center, or the object of all the rasas in the spiritual world, and the Lord's nature is ananda, our bliss, and everything in relation to the Lord, when we are serving Him in love, is filled with bliss. So the lamentation and the fear and the anger in the spiritual world is part of bliss. It is, it's nothing negative about it. It nourishes the ananda. In the material world, it is different. These negative emotions, they deplete the bliss or the sukha of the material world. And we want happiness, we don't want distress. We like to enjoy very nicely, and we don't like a fearful situation, insecurity, anger, disturbance like this. We don't like. So this is the nature of the material world is based on duality. In the spiritual world, everything is based on the ananda of Krishna. In the material world, there's a duality of I like this and I don't like that. This gives me pleasure, this gives me pain. So why is that? It's because we are finite, and we are the center of the enjoyment. And enjoyment sometimes ends. So because we are self-centered in our enjoyment in this material world, though we have a capacity for all these rasas, all the same rasas are there, we have some which are desirable and some which are undesirable. And this way we exist in the material world, sometimes in happiness and sometimes in distress because of this. So this picture from the material point of view, therefore, is not a picture of happiness, a picture of distress. We do not like fear, we don't like gas things, etc. Therefore, for the materialist, Narasimha, is not possible to think of Nrisimhadeva as God. From the point of view even of some people in religion, it is very difficult for them to understand this form of God. Because their concept of God is a nice, peaceful person. That's all. Peaceful person who rules very kindly everybody. And this is how we like to think of God. And to think of Him as ferocious like this, or who has got an animal body, this is very strange. They cannot conceive of such a thing, how this can be. They want to think of Him as a nice, peaceful old man. But we find that in the Bhagavatam we'll have all sorts of descriptions of the Lord which are completely different. In fact, there's not one where He's an old man at all. At best He's a young man. And then He may be animal form also. Instead of two hands He has four arms, or He may have 1,000 arms also. So the conception of God of many people is very, very limited. Because their conception of God is maybe Shantarasa, peaceful. So we have a peaceful God because we want peace. And the ultimate goal is Shantarasa. So therefore, even if they have a personal God, He's all peaceful. However, the nature of God is not this Shanta. The nature of God is Ananda or bliss. And in that bliss, we'll have this mixture of all types of qualities. Which give rise to more bliss. So therefore we'll have all sorts of varieties in God. We'll have the ferocious God, Narasimhadeva. And then we'll have the very peaceful Lord also, that is Krishna playing the flute in Goloka. In fact, Krishna is so peaceful that He doesn't hold the weapons of Vishnu. Vishnu has a club in His hand and chakra in His hand. But Krishna doesn't hold anything in His hand except a flute. He just simply plays a flute. Krishna is very, very peaceful. And that is why even Lord Brahma has difficulty understanding, is this the Supreme Lord or not? Because He doesn't manifest any power. He does not manifest anything. He simply plays. And he's not, hasn't even got a form like God. He's just a little boy, a little innocent boy. And he runs around in the fields and puts dirt on himself. He takes berries and uses them as decoration. No jewels, just some wild berries and minerals he sticks on his body. So in the form of Krishna, of course, God is even more peaceful than any, but also difficult to understand, because from the perception of people in the material world, God should be great. He should be peaceful, but he should be great also. So therefore we have a big God sitting on a throne who's very old and very peaceful. But we have Krishna who's very peaceful also, but he's opposite. He's not old, he's very, very young. He does not show power at all. In fact, the opposite. He shows lack of power. He's completely dependent upon his mother and father. He runs to them for protection. He has no weapons. He does not show great strength even. He looks very small, his body very delicate. His skin is so delicate that if he touches the grass or the leaves, then it gets bruised. Very, very delicate. So therefore everyone is worried about Krishna when he goes into the forest. And Mother Yasoda is constantly thinking, why did I send Krishna into the forest? Maybe there's some demons there. Maybe he'll make some danger there. And similarly, the gopis are afraid when Krishna goes in the forest. Something will happen. He's a little delicate. So therefore Krishna is very peaceful, but also doesn't show the power of God. Very, very beautiful person, young person, delicate person also. So this actually, the form of Krishna is actually the supreme form. Because he doesn't even show his greatness. And therefore, it is a stimulus for greater love. The idea of the greatness of God is a barrier to spontaneous loving emotions. Just like when Vasudeva and Devaki, they saw Krishna after he came back to Mathura, and he killed Kamsa, and they were very happy to meet their son. So they showed a relationship like mother and father, and Devaki was, the milk was flowing from her breast also, just like Yasoda, and she had great affection for Krishna, but it was not the same type of love. Their love could never be the same, because they knew that Krishna was God, because they saw with their own eyes when he was born he was Vishnu, and then he turned into Krishna. And so they're thinking, this is the Supreme Lord. He's my son, but he's also the Supreme Lord. So the affection was there, but also the idea that his God is there. So they were not in such an exalted position as Yasoda and Nanda, who never had an idea that Krishna was God. This is our son. He's been born to us, he's our son. And their parental affection was uninhibited by any concept of God. And therefore Krishna is the highest form of God. He does not show greatness, he does not show power, does not show ferocity at all, anything like that. So therefore, hard to understand also. In one sense, the people on a lower level can appreciate the form of Shrivadeva because he has power at least. But Krishna himself, often he does not show any power, he shows helplessness. He runs away from Mother Yasoda with a stick. Mother Yasoda tries to punish him. And he simply plays in the fields, and Brahma thinks, how can this be God? We will see, test him. So it is very difficult for even the Devatas, even Lord Brahma, to see the real nature of Krishna. Nevertheless, we see that Krishna contains everything. Because he's the Supreme Lord, he has all powers, though he may not manifest them at all times for a particular purpose. So therefore he can also exhibit his powers. He exhibited his powers to Lord Brahma by expanding himself into all the cowherd boys and the calves. And he exhibited his power by lifting Govardhan Hill and thereby defeating Lord Indra. Indra got exhausted. Indra was very powerful, but he cannot compete with Krishna, because all of his rain got exhausted. And Krishna still protected the devotees and saved them from the rain. So at Krishnavasi he can exhibit his powers also. Yet we find that even he exhibits his powers, the devotees in Vrindavan, they still don't see him as God. In spite of that, when Krishna kills Putana, and then everyone thinks, oh, this is very fantastic, wonder how it happened. Maybe he's got some great powers like that, must be someone special. But they can never see him as God. When Mother Yasoda looks in Krishna's mouth, then Krishna definitely shows he is God by showing the universal form and shows how he's in power and everything. And Mother Yasoda thinks, yes, my son is very special, the whole universe is in his mouth. But then she forgets the whole incident again. Huh? Krishna's playing a trick, and he knows that Mother Yasoda, this can happen, but Mother Yasoda is so much in love with Krishna, she cannot accept this fact in her relationship. So therefore Krishna covers over all of these aspects of greatness. He of course shows them as part of his lila, but he also covers them up again so his devotees continue their relationship of love with him. And within that relationship, even with Krishna, we'll find mixture of these rasas. Of course, the ferocity of Nrsimhadeva we will not see in Krishna. Because Krishna is just a little boy, so we'll not see this ferocity where uncontrolled, angry, and blood all over his body. We will not see that with Krishna in Vrindavan. And the relationship was totally different. But within the Vrindavan Lila, we'll have all these rasas manifesting. There'll be anger and a fear and lamentation also. It will be there as part of covered by the sweetness of Krishna's lila. So in the form of Nrsimhadeva, of course, it is not sweet. There's no presentation of sweetness. Nrsimhadeva comes to show anger and his virya, his power, his prowess and ghastliness. He comes to show this instead. So therefore it becomes very, very prominent in Nrsimhadeva. And we'll not see that sweetness of Krishna in Nrsimhadeva. So a very, very different presentation of God. Okay. Yet mysteriously it's all God. It's all the same God. We should not think this is one God and that's another God. Nrsimhadeva is one God and Krishna is another God. It's all the same God actually. This is Vishnu and Krishna are the same God. They're not a different God, they're one. But by Krishna's Achintya Shakti, he's able to manifest these different forms and be the same person. And these different forms, he exhibits seemingly different qualities. But it's the same person, actually. So in the form of Krishna, he exhibits sweetness. Supreme sweetness. And in form of Nrsimhadeva, his purpose is to exhibit anger and terror, fear, etc. And therefore this description is here. But in both cases, it's the Supreme Lord, and therefore it is wonderful. Also, this is nothing for the devotee. There's nothing fearful in this. Of course, for the materialist, they cannot understand. In the early days of the movement, I think someone was taking a television, making a television program about this kind of rather critical program. So they showed the photograph of Nrsimhadeva on the altar, tearing apart some, as an example of our primitive nature or something, worshipping some, you know, God who tears people apart. They cannot understand that this also can be an object of beauty for the devotee. And they say, oh, this is so bad. It's like, you know, it's a violence there. And we're worshipping a form of violence. And so they cannot see the this is part of the nature of God. Very, very difficult for them. But the devotee can do that. And therefore, Prahlad is not afraid. He says, I am not afraid of this form of yours, including your mouth and your eyebrows and your eyes and your garland and your mane and your blood and your ears and your roaring and your anger. But that is not a cause of fear for me. This is an exhibition of your power. And therefore he addresses the Lord as Ajita. Ajita means one who is not conquered. One who cannot be conquered, has never been conquered, who cannot be conquered at all. just to praise the form of Nrsimhadev. He comes and kills Hiranyakasipu and takes on this ferocious form. So this is pleasing to the devotee. The Lord comes to please the devotee. He comes to protect the devotee. He comes to annihilate the demons. This he does. He killed Narasimhadev, and he killed Hiranyakasipu, and this way he got rid of a dharma, restored dharma, and he protected Prahlad. But Prabhupada explains that actually the real cause of the Lord's appearance is to please his devotees. And he does that by displaying his pastimes, and everyone gets great enjoyment from them. And in the same way, when we read the Leela of Nrsimhadev and Hiranyakasipu, then we derive pleasure from the appearance of the Lord like this. So the Lord comes to give pleasure to his devotees by displaying his Leelas. So in this way, Prahlad also is taking pleasure in this form of the Lord, appreciating his wonderful qualities. And not thinking he's come only to protect me, but this is the Lord displaying his wonderful powers. So, any question there? Yeah, it was surprising for everyone, including Hiranyakasipu. He said, "What is this?" No one had seen a form like this with a lion and a man body and a lion head, and lion claws. A very, very new form of the Lord. They had never seen this form before. It was surprising for everyone, including Prahlad. But at the same time, he answered, "This is God." In that sense, not surprising. It was wonderful for him. You could appreciate it very nicely. Yeah, so definitely surprising. Therefore, it's called Adbhuta. This is another rasa. Adbhuta means wonder, surprise. Adbhuta Singha. So he's an astonishing lion form. Unexpected.
What's the neutral emotion?
Neutral. That Shanta rasa, in which one has shows some reverence, etc. In the examples given in the Nectar Devotion of Shanta Rasa of the yogis who are meditating on Paramatma, and they become very peaceful, and they study Upanishads, etc. And they have a realization of God as Paramatma, because Paramatma is Vishnu, but they're not actively engaged in service of any sort. So, in other words, that feeling of love is not so positive. They have no material attraction. They don't want to enjoy the material world. They recognize God, but that love is not really positive there. So therefore, they have no impetus to do anything for the Lord. And so that's that neutral type of relationship.
For the Brahmanas?
Hmm?
The wives of the Brahmanas?
Hmm. Were they in Shanta Rasa? Well, actually, they offended Krishna by refusing to serve him. I don't know if they're in Shanta Rasa or not, but I think they were a little bit negative. I suppose the Karmakandis, more like Karmakandis. More Karmakandis, not even up to that level.
But they regretted afterwards, and they
wished they could. Yeah, of course, they, because their wives were more advanced than them. Who's another example of Shanta Rasa? In the spiritual world also, it seems, according to some authorities, the grass and the cows and the trees are in Shanta Rasa, even in the spiritual world, because they cannot actively serve the Lord. At least it's very limited. Of course, we see in the Bhagavatam that the trees bend down their branches and offer the fruit to Krishna. That much action is there, but it's quite limited compared to the other creatures. And the cows, of course, are more active. They run towards Krishna when Krishna comes. However, at the same time, they cannot express the same emotions as one who has a human-like form. So therefore, a little more limited. So some of that are all called nishantarasa also. and a flute also.
Maharaj, would it be beneficial for us to you were talking about the primary and secondary referencing the spiritual world and then the perverted perfection in the material world. Would it be beneficial for us to cultivate our material relationships with people that, you know, like say my mother and my husband, etc., and see them in relation to Krishna? Would that be beneficial to actually try and cultivate that type of thing, to turn it around, not to actually have it in such a perverted way?
Uh-huh. Well, that's actually what Grihastha life is for, I suppose. Huh? Because one has desires for relationships, so therefore family life basically expresses that, those relationships, in a way which is not excessive and subject to some regulation. And at the same time, we mix that with devotional service, so one gradually becomes detached. So in other words, if one tries to suppress all of the material relationship urges artificially, then that doesn't seem to work, and they come out anyway eventually. So therefore, one has a grihastha ashram in which one can have those relationships, but with some idea of gradually purifying those relationships and detaching oneself and becoming more attached to Krishna.
It was more
in
the terms of, like, say, when we first introduced to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the tendency for us to, like, say, in my case, tendency to reject
everything.
My family,
yeah,
my parents.
Sure.
Yeah. To basically sever my mother from my relationship with my mother.
Yeah.
And finally now it's better because I see, okay, there's a relationship that I can have with the Lord.
Yeah.
With the parental relationship or with my husband's children, etc. That sort of thing. So you can say, okay, this is a relationship that can be there in a spiritual world.
Well, I don't think we can say it's the same relationship because basically our relationships in the material world are material. They're not centered on Krishna to begin with. The basis is material. However, suddenly breaking the relationships really doesn't improve our situation. It doesn't actually, we can literally cut the relationship, but the attachment will still be there. So therefore it's like an artificial type of renunciation. So the recommended process is gradual renunciation, and that we don't suddenly just break off all the attachments and everything like that, but we do it in a more gradual way by gradually increasing our attachment to Krishna, and through that then these relationships gradually, from our side, the attachments will become less and less. If the attachment is there from the other side, of course, that's another thing, but as far as we are concerned, our attachment to them will be less and less. Because as long as we're attached to people in the material world, that means to that extent we're not attached to Krishna. And therefore Bhagavan says one who is griha-vrata, that is, he is attached to family members, he cannot go to Vaikuntha. Unless one is 100% dedicated to the Supreme Lord and him only, then you cannot go there. So these attachments are, you know, bondage in the material world, and we have to come back again to fulfill those desires and to somehow cultivate those relationships again.
Would I have to actually sever a physical tie in order to become detached, or is detachment something that I can practice internally?
Well, it's internal. The external detachment is not so important. Like, for instance, a married couple, the husband may die, but if the woman's, this physical detachment, because he dies, but then the wife is attached, and she'll may remain attached all of her lifetime to him. So then that's on the subtle level, the attachment is still there. So the other attachment, that is on the subtle level, is more important to break than on the physical level.
So I could still sort of serve Krishna and still be with my mother and actually be attached.
That is what is called the nishkama karma system. One should work in the material world, do one's duties, and strive for detachment in that situation, not become overcome by those attachments. But do them as a duty only. That is what is called nishkama karma. And as long as, even in devotional service, as long as one has attachments to that extent, one should also participate in the varnashram system. In other words, one should act within the rules and regulations of varnashrama to the extent that we still have material attachments. If we are completely detached and then we're called Paramahamsa, then we have no obligation to the Varnashram system. But as long as we do, then we have to work to some degree in that system and follow those rules. Which means we have to involve in society and have to involve in family life, basically. And carry out the duties within that also. That is, duties between husband and wife and children and father and mother and society and relatives, all these things, which can get entangling. But then one has to be careful not to become overcome by that.
You mentioned that for members is barrier to developing our true love of Krishna. How do you that essentially, like, say, where we have spiritual masters and there's so much ornaments displayed there, and we're supposed to be cultivating our love for Krishna? How is that helping us in, isn't it building up a barrier in our perceptions of what it's all about?
Because of the respect. Oh, I see. Well, respect is always there in relation to getting spiritual knowledge. One has to have, in other words, one has to be humble. That is the main idea. It's not we are just being reverent. I think the idea is we have to be humble. That's the main idea in our relationship to get spiritual knowledge. One has to have humility and think of ourselves as not having knowledge. And therefore, we have an eagerness to get that knowledge. So therefore, we treat with respect for that reason, but not in the sense of powerful or grandeur and all that. The supreme controller, we don't think it's that. That's not what we're worshipping it. Well, that's the regular Hindu concept. Mother and father are God, is it? And regular dharma, that is so, that one has a debt to mother and father and relatives and rishis and devatas and everything in the material world. Almost one has a debt because our body comes out of the father and mother and they raise us. So definitely the rinna is there, the debt is there, and one has to give respect. That's of course a general condition, because we see in the case of Prahlad, who was treated so badly by his father, then that rule does not really apply. So therefore Bhagavatam says that a mother is not a mother, nor a father and a father, nor a relative, or even a teacher, unless they can deliver you from birth and death. In other words, the responsibility of parents is to lead you on the spiritual path. Then we can give all respect. It also says in scripture, worship the guest as God, Atithi Narayana. When a guest comes to the house, you should worship him as God, as Narayana. So what does that mean? Every beggar that comes, we're going to start worshiping him? No, it doesn't mean that. But the guest, of course, one should give him respect. But then, according to the type of guest, then we'll give respect also. So the respect is the guest is a wandering saint. Then, of course, we give the most respect. And according to the type of person there is, he has spiritual knowledge, then we give the greatest respect. So like that with parents, yes, the rule is there. But then again, that is also subject to conditions. If the parents are trying to make you into a materialist and you don't want to be, then should you follow their order anyway? No. One should reject at that point. If it's not good for your spiritual development, then we have to reject in that case. Of course, we don't have to do it so violently or whatever, but we should understand that their order is not absolute. If they're trying to do harm to us and put us in the material world, as Hiranyakasipu was doing with Prahlad, trying to educate him to be a big materialist, Prahlad refused. He said, I don't want this education. So he didn't treat his father as God because he knew the order was wrong. Yeah, of course. In most cases, we have to give respect because I said there's a debt to pay because they have raised you and everything. And in terms of karma, you have to pay that debt back also. But then, of course, the other rule is that if you surrender completely to the Lord, then the Lord absolves you of all karmas also. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayami. And then all these debts are finished if one surrenders to the Lord. So in relation to devotional service, that rule does not hold such relevance. But at the same time, it's not that we should unnecessarily disturb the parents or insult the parents or whatever. We try to be as gentle as possible in the relationship.
When you're dealing with your family and things, isn't it the rule is you're not doing it for yourself, you're not doing it for your own pleasure, you're doing it for Krishna's pleasure?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the deciding factor of
whether
you're going to be attached or you're not going to be so attached?
Yeah.
It's a duty if you're doing it, it's a duty.
Yeah. Well, the principle is we're doing it for something for the pleasure of Krishna, not for our pleasure or anyone else's pleasure. But, of course, we do have to consider the particular situation, not... the long term. We have to see the long term situation, not just the short term situation sometimes. So we may have to do things gradual also, kind of suddenly create changes and make great disturbance. And we can also not act beyond our qualification. Yeah? Because by doing so, then eventually we fall back in the same position again. we take a very extreme action, and then later on we go back to the same position again. And so we have to gradually advance.
Sometimes by the mercy of devotees who might find themselves in an extremely auspicious situation in devotional service and association with devotees.
Yeah.
But if that's beyond our, does the same rule apply? But if it's beyond our actual qualification.
Well, good association is always good. But of course, in that situation, what is our qualification? Gradually, of course, we can improve through that good association. We can improve. My point is that we should not jump to something which is beyond us. And let's say we're at a certain stage of devotional service. Let's say we're at Shraddha, the face of Shraddha, or maybe we're at Sada Sangha stage, we're just beginning devotional service. So then we should not imitate and try to go up to Nishtha or something like that and pretend that we're something when we have to go through these stages. Because if we imitate, on one level, then eventually we come back again to this old level again. That's another disturbance. So, like that, we have to gradually advance rather than suddenly put ourselves too high and then come back down to the same level again. It will be a disappointment for us also if we do that. One of the, what Vishnu Chakravarti says, one of the symptoms of the neophyte devotee is he makes rules for himself which he can't follow. In other words, he sets nice standards. I'm going to chant so many rounds, I'm going to do this, 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 and he does it for a little while, and then gradually comes back to the same position as of niyama akshama, his inability to follow the rules that he sets for himself. He's a little ambitious, and he has to come back down again later on. Okay. Hare Krishna.